This is the Sonya Poulton Show on today's News Talk TNT.
Welcome back. In this hour, we cross to Wales to get the very latest in the wake of the school knife attack, which occurred yesterday. And we hear about the campaign to get 1 million signatures. And a reminder of our question of the day. After Labour vows to renationalise most rail services within 5 years, we ask, what other services would you like to see under state control? And here are our numbers.
Our lines are open. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, this one has got you talking. Peter on X says the water companies, and Cara says, unfortunately, any state control goes to the pits. I don't trust any governments these days, and we can't even get potholes filled up. Take our local planning team who are allowed to run consultancy business with a full-time planning job. The department is inconsistent with its... Oh, Cara, you've written practically a book. I can't read all of that, but I take your point. Absolutely, I do. Yes, I do. Now, I think it's safe to say that the COVID era was an abject failure of journalism as so-called journalists rushed to prop up the official narrative. Almost every legacy media journalist went along with the charade, and in the UK, few more so than those people at breakfast show Good Morning Britain. This was the show primarily fronted by Piers Morgan and Susanna Reid. Piers, you may remember, stormed off set and never returned after the weatherman took him to task for his creepy obsession with Meghan Markle. Well, yesterday morning, Miss Reid was at her Good Morning Britain desk talking to three other COVID pushers, journalists Kevin Maguire, Andrew Pearce, and Richard Madeley. They were talking about the new report that a generation of children will fail at school and in exams as a consequence of lockdown. Susanna said, I feel we failed our children, and the others nodded in unison. But no, wait a minute, Susanna, we did not fail our children. We, i.e. people like me, we campaigned and protested, we petitioned, we shouted, we podcasted, we made endless social media posts, and we said very, very loudly and repeatedly that we are deeply, deeply concerned with the lockdown measures being applied to everyone, including children. And you, Miss Reid, and the rest of legacy media just kept ramping up the pressure day in and day out. You and your former co-anchor, Piers Morgan, were major contributors to the total and utter abject failure that was COVID-19. No, Susanna and co, you are narrative pushers on Good Morning Britain. We didn't fail. Stop deflecting. In fact, Susanna Reid was right in the thick of it all. She was even there when the so-called first COVID vaccines were administered live on Good Morning Britain to two people, including a man called William Shakespeare. No, you cannot make this up. I remember it well. That was the day I realised that they all knew they were laughing in our faces, and they still did it anyway. That was the day that Health Secretary Matt Hancock was on with Morgan and Reid, and he pretended to cry and they did nothing. They enabled him. He was, in fact, laughing in plain sight. Do you remember it? Take a look, viewers. Let's remind ourselves of who really failed.
Just simple words there, reacting it. You're quite emotional by that.
Well, it's just, it's been such a tough year for so many people. And there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that, you know, we can get on with our lives. And you know, there's still a few months to go. I've still got this worry that we can't blow it now, Piers. We've still got to get the vaccine to millions of people. And so we've got to keep sticking by the rules. But it's just, you know, there's so much work gone into this, and I'm really, really, it makes me proud to be British.
Getting straight to the facts. Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back for the second hour, Gemma Cooper. How did you feel seeing that, Gemma?
Oh, it just sends a chill down your spine, doesn't it? And not least the amount of people who believed that, all that rubbish, you know, and that Matt Hancock was genuinely upset, although I think a lot of people questioned his validity. You can see the glint in his eye, can't you? You can actually see the glint in his eye when he looks back up to the camera, how utterly jubilant he is that his big pharma project has got through and all of the kickbacks he'll be getting from those big pharma companies. Everything went to plan according to their version of events, didn't it? And I know that William Shakespeare, and also there was the woman, wasn't there? Well, she's dead now.
Yes, and he's dead. Woman.
He's dead. Yeah, I thought he was dead, William Shakespeare. I mean, you know, you can always say, well, they were old anyway. But then you could have argued they could just take their chances with a respiratory virus. That's what normally finishes most old people off. Influenza, right. and pneumonia. It's called the old person's friend. Gives you a kind of out, you know, at the end of your life. You could have argued they didn't need it at all, even if you believe in all of that stuff. You could say, really, at that age, they could just take their chances. Honestly, the whole thing. And now to be backtracking, I mean, that makes me feel even sicker, actually, because it's kind of like, oh, sorry, we didn't really know. We didn't understand what we were doing. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And you loved it. The people in the media, the mainstream, that's where I was. That's where I was. I was right in the thick of it. You know, I was at the BBC at the time of all this. And this is why I walked, because I could see colleagues changing in front of my eyes, relishing, you know, getting off on this virtue signaling. Absolutely loving it. I saw a side to my colleagues, a lot of my colleagues, that I'd never seen. The real side of human nature that was enjoying the power. It was really, because normally journalists, we take a moderate view. You know, that's if you're a good one. You take the moderate view. You look at all sides of the story. They're very rarely more, you know, it's just two. There's obviously 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 versions of the same event. So you don't really, you know, don't get to really have a say. These were journalists that were getting to have a say. You know, I think this, my ego thinks that. Not just presenters who, you know, you have to have a very overdeveloped ego to present all the time on the mainstream, but journalists who before were very good at looking in the round, you know, the checks and balances that you need to do. Otherwise, you lose your job because you get it wrong all the time. But no, there's just a shift in the human psyche, and we saw stuff we'd never seen. But similarly, the opposite, we also saw people waking up. So it goes deeper. It's a microcosm of what's happening in our society, looking back at that clip and people that got drunk on their own power, drunk on their own egos from all walks of life, all walks of life. We saw those shocking scenes at a funeral, didn't we? As that clip that went viral of a man trying to put his arm around his elderly mother who just lost her husband. He just lost his father. And the funeral director rushed in. No, you can't touch each other. You know, drunk on power, drunk on cruelty. I keep saying it at the moment. It's 4 years. You know, we can never forget, because it will happen again. It will. And I do think that report yesterday about children, which is what you're referring to, is what Susanna Reid was talking about. It's what we were talking about yesterday, that huge report, how we failed an entire generation. I was thinking about it after we came off air. That's a 25 years is a generation. So we're looking now at the legacy of what's come out. We should never forget what's happened. And I do believe that young people were being primed for something in the future. Maybe not in our lifetimes now, Sonia, but this was a big programming exercise into young minds, little sponges. So when it happens again, it's kind of already in there, you know? Oh yeah, this happened when I was a kid. Yeah, I'll go along with it. I truly believe that's what this was about. I truly believe that.
I don't like the gaslighting. I mean, the fact is that Susanna Reid absolutely propped up the narrative. There is no doubt about it. And people like you and I were punished for questioning the narrative and going against it. So I'm not having these people rewriting history, not at all. And actually, to me, they are absolutely entirely complicit, because rather than say, oh, Piers Morgan, oh, you're really emotional there, what they should really have said is, look, that actually looks like you're laughing, because he was blatantly laughing. Our health secretary, who told us that we just needed a shot in the eye of what we heard yesterday from Professor Angus Dalgleish, is so detrimentally harmful and dangerous to us. But they all went along with it. So we will not allow them to rewrite history, because people like you and I, Gemma, we paid the cost of standing up and being counted. And people like Susanna Reid never will. They just continue to be promoted. But that's okay, because we all know where we stand, don't we? So, Gemma, anything interesting happened in the last hour?
Yes, yes. Power structure of the Scottish government looks like it's crumbling within the last half an hour. This is a big story. I will just focus on this one, actually. Hamza Yousaf, First Minister of Scotland, he called an emergency cabinet meeting, and it's been announced that the power sharing arrangement between the Scottish National Party and the Green Party, which was the only reason really that the Scottish National Party could get stay in government because they didn't have enough MPs at the last election, it's crumbled. And this is all to do with the fact that just a few days ago, the Scotland announced that it was reducing its net zero targets, that it's aimed to get carbon emissions down 75% by 2030. They said was completely unachievable. They say they're committed to net zero now by 2045. The Green Party did not like this. And the rainbow, it's all to do with the rainbow lobby arm of the Scottish Greens. Last week, they took to the streets to protest against the revisioning of emission targets. And also, key here, the rainbow lobby of the green arm of the Scottish Party, they took to the streets protesting in response to the CAS review and the announcement that the only NHS gender clinic in Scotland was going to pause puberty blockers for children. The Scottish rainbow arm of the Greens did not like that at all. So the two leaders of the Scottish Green Party said, OK, we'll take a vote on whether or not you want to remain power sharing with the SNP. And it's obviously been a resounding no. And it does mean that now, effectively, Hamza Yousaf is running a minority government with not enough SNP seats taken to actually be the leading party. So it's chaos in Scotland this morning. Emergency cabinet meeting. Normally, cabinet meetings are on a Tuesday in Scotland. This morning, it was an emergency one. They'd obviously gone to him this morning and said, we don't want to be part of your government anymore. They didn't say that last week. It was only after the Rainbow Wing took to the streets in anger that the Greens said, OK, we'll have to sit down and look at this. Other than they were still willing to work together, the two co-leaders have positions in the Scottish government. It was the rainbow lobby that forced the hand of the Green Party. Interesting there. Still the minority, but acting like they're the majority in that party system.
The Green Party have been almost entirely captured to a certain degree by the rainbow lobby, as you called them. You're absolutely right. I did make a documentary to do with the Green Party and their failures when it came to child safeguarding. They were actually being advised by a paedophile who was assaulting and attacking a 10-year-old, and he was eventually in prison. But that was an advisor for the Green Party. So they completely lost their minds in England, Wales, all over the UK. The Green Party, they should be focusing on what's going on in our climate, Gemma. They should actually be looking at why there is a problem with our climate and perhaps consider looking more closely at weather modification as one perfect example. But the Green Party won't touch anything like that. I once approached Caroline Lucas, infamously a very famous leader of the Green Party for a very long period of time, and I asked her about weather modification. She wouldn't have it. Absolutely wouldn't have it. So they're all about, they're ideologically captured. So I'm not entirely surprised by your story, Gemma. What do you think the outcome of it is going to be?
Well, it's not looking good for Hamza Yousaf, is it? I mean, we've got embezzlement charges for Nicola Sturgeon's husband, you know, the former chief executive of the SNP. It does not looking good for the SNP. And of course, it leaves them with technically not enough seats. They had 65 wins at the last election, the SNP, and then they co-opted in the Greens, who won 8 seats at the last election in Scotland. And that the power sharing agreement gave the two co-leaders positions of the Green Party in Parliament. And that's what enabled that, you know, this working arrangement to work effectively. So now we don't know from this. It's a breaking story. It's only just happened in the last half an hour. So we've only got those scant details that the Greens have pulled out. What this means procedurally, what will happen? I don't know. This is quite a significant, as I say, indication that power is crumbling in Scotland and he's losing his grip. But I do think that questions need to be asked of, you know, when the targets for emissions were announced, there was no indication from the two co-leaders that they wanted to pull out. It was almost like they say it's better to be in the tent than be out in the cold. Maybe they thought they could do still exercise some power from within. It's questions need to be asked of why, when the rainbow lobby jump up and down saying, we're not happy, then people, you know, people act. It's not right. That's a skewed inversion of power that the minority dictates to the majority. But you talking about the rainbow flag at the top of the last hour outside that building, you know, it's held such power and such sway in society for so long. And I think it's still an indication that that lobby has a big voice. And we wonder where that voice is funded from and who's really controlling it. I think that's the question here.
It's a massive question. And we also know that this is not a grassroots initiative at all. This is a top-down process without a shadow of a doubt. It plays completely into the hands of the globalist power structure. We know that as well. But Humza Yousaf, he's not having a great time in his leadership at the moment, is he? Because he's obviously also having to deal with the fallout from the charges to do with Nicola Sturgeon's husband. That's not great for the SNP. So he's had to deal with that as well. And then on top of that, of course, thousands upon thousands of complaints as a direct consequence of his hate crime update. So he's not having a good time in Scotland, and which brings a smile to my face, Gemma. I'm bad like that. But I mean, how do you think ultimately he's going to get out of this situation, really? Because he's being backed into a corner to a certain degree, isn't he?
He is. But interestingly, I'll just refer to this poll that has come out this morning in relation to politics as a whole. And I think this ties in very well with what is going on in Scotland, possibly. And it shows an astonishing amount of people now just don't trust any political party at all. The number of people in Britain across the whole of the UK, including Scotland, that say that they trust their government or any party to put the needs of the people before the needs of the party or personal interest, that has risen since the last election to 50% of the population. 50% of the population don't trust any political party now, don't trust any politician. They think everybody's in it for themselves, their own interests, party interests, corporate interests, lobby interests. It was 29% at the last election. It's now 50% and rising, I would say. And I think this will probably echo some of the comments that we're coming in to the question this morning. You know, what should be state-owned? Most people are saying nothing. Nothing should be state-owned. We don't trust them. So I think that, you know, Humza Yousaf is on the ropes. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, if you tie that in with the results of this poll this morning, a significant YouGov poll, then it's every politician, you know. And I think these elections that are coming up, you know, in the UK and the US, it will be very telling. The amount of grassroots organisations, freedom people that are now standing in independent as independents and in local and national elections. Let's see if this is the beginning of a shift in the political landscape where people try and take the power back and work, as you say, in the last hour, collaboratively and not top-down pyramidal institutional ways which don't serve anybody except those at the top.
I love that. Gemma, you've just literally ended both your reports today on a positive note, and we absolutely love that on this Thursday. We'll see Gemma tomorrow. We'll be right back.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
Tell us what happened on this during this Congress that you tried to have to take place in Berlin, but you were not really successful because our police intervened and some people from the interior minister cursed them.
It was quite hysterical, you know, this level of rhetorical escalation, and then also politicians in Berlin saying that this should be banned, and in fact, you know, that wouldn't have been legal. There were no legal grounds for a ban. And but it was clear that if they couldn't ban it, they could still find other ways to prevent it. One of these ways was by freezing our bank account, so freezing Jewish Voices bank account, because our account was being used to gather the funds for it.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back. Good morning to Russ Kieron on X. He says, go on, Sonia Poulton, handing Susanna Reid her ass. Well, the point is I just hate being gaslighted. If you weren't prepared to stand up and be counted during COVID, don't try and rope us all in. We are not all complicit. Some of us did our job as journalists. Now, on that note, the Alliance for Natural Health has launched a campaign to gather 1 million signatures petitioning YouTube to change the medical medical misinformation policy it implemented in August 2023. The policy currently disallows any health information that does not align with local authorities like the US National Institutes for Health and the World Health Organization. Joining me to discuss this campaign is Dr. Robert Verkerk, Executive Director of the Alliance for Natural Health. Good morning, Robert.
Sonia, good morning to you.
This couldn't come sooner for me, Robert, frankly. One of our earliest editorials this week was about how, after 10 years, I had had my first strike on YouTube for medical misinformation, and all I had done was some commentary on a Member of Parliament, Andrew Bridgen, talking about excess deaths. I literally quoted him, and they struck me as medical misinformation. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
It is. It's very subtle. It's being controlled by artificial intelligence and algorithms. We got our three strikes back in the day in 2020 very, very quickly. We already identified one was for talking about vitamin C. The next was talking for zinc. And the third one was giving coverage of one of the big London demonstrations against the narrative, in which the claim by YouTube was that we showed a picture that had someone with an ivermectin banner. And that was enough to give us the final strike and to be deplatformed. But frankly, the problem we have now is that the pandemic has ostensibly, if you believe the World Health Organization, ended some months ago, back in May 2023. And what we're seeing is this new rash of censorship. And it's not deplatforming anymore, but it's use of algorithms to control what people see and what people hear. And it is massively distorting the information that we get. So we've seen it now happening in the field of keto diets and intermittent fasting. Basically, they're saying if you give health information that isn't fully aligned with either the leading national authorities in a given country or the World Health Organization, we will treat it as misinformation and we will carry a loaded gun to decide if we're going to remove it or not. The policy disallows it. So Big Social is basically doing the job of governments now, and it's a clever workaround. So in the United States, for example, they believe that they can't be done for breach of the First Amendment for free speech.
So obviously YouTube, owned by Google, but why is it in their interest to be, you know, essentially supporting this medical tyranny and not allowing us to actually report facts? Why is it in place in the first place?
Because essentially what has happened is a group of corporations are fully in bed with governments and intergovernmental organizations to form what we can think of as a corporatocracy. And these are the guys who are running the world at the moment. They want to see a shift. The pandemics are very useful. There are two areas that they can really feel that they can control us. One is around our fear of an infectious disease that can spread between borders that they justify requires global control. And the other aspect is through the financial systems. So you'll see, you know, in the UK, thank God, people like Nigel Farage going out there and talking very, very clearly about the fact that he has been debanked. So if you don't play the game and you don't play the narrative, you can lose your bank account. If you lose your bank account, you know, life becomes somewhat harder. And the other way they want to control us is through health. So if they can control the information that you receive, and you hear that things like ivermectin are nasty horse medicine, something that the FDA has had to row back on now because they realize it was just all a construct. The public is not fully aware at the extent to which the information they receive on their cell phone or on their computer is being controlled by these hidden covert algorithms. So, you know, if you are someone that follows the BBC News and CNN, ABC, etc., you will get a completely different perspective of the world, including a different perspective on what you should do to protect your health, particularly if another pandemic was to raise its ugly head, compared with someone who is already in a different kind of echo chamber. And that's why the world is so polarized at the moment.
It is. It's horribly polarized, isn't it? I find it astonishing that you say that you received a strike for advocating for vitamin C. This, all of this, literally, it blows my mind, Robert. Every time I hear this, it feels so Orwellian, doesn't it? It's, this is surely the most perfect of examples of tech overreach.
It is. And the difficulty is that that kind of news does not find its way into the mainstream. So if you're someone who's already following mainstream news, you will think the world is pretty much the same as it always was. That we're locked in our echo chambers. These echo chambers are the result of these filter bubbles that we all receive, and all of it is going on, you know, behind the scenes. So we have to force these big social media corporations that are doing the dirty work of governments and the globalists to become transparent about what they're doing. You know, we can see it already with those few alt channels like Telegram that are building some big lists. You will see that there is a massive move to try and destroy Telegram. Signal has already been probably largely, seems to be in a CIA instrument in the first place. But it's pretty difficult. We see the growth of Rumble now, which is obviously absolutely key. But the answer is to both develop more sophisticated alt media channels. And Sonia, what a great job TNT Radio is doing front. But also to bring these systems together, because otherwise we can all get lost in our echo chambers. So we are, through freespeechforhealth.org, you can sign a petition and be amongst the 1 million that we're going to bring to the offices of Alphabet, the owners of Google and YouTube, to essentially force them to say, your medical misinformation policy is killing people. Essentially, if they deny people key information, for example, their latest attack has been on intermittent fasting and keto diets, nothing to do with infectious diseases at all. And no. They are limiting the amount of good information from genuine experts. And what they're doing instead is prioritizing information from people who really are not experts, but are very critical of keto diet. Again, forcing people to go back to drugs and vaccines as the primary mechanism of control.
So Robert, we just have to take a brief break just to go some headlines, absolutely. But we will be right back. Do not move.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Newsflash!
Yeah. Now, without further ado,
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. 18 of Donald Trump's allies have been indicted by a grand jury in Arizona for legally challenging the results of the 2020 election. The bishop stabbed in last week's alleged terrorist attack in Sydney has weighed in on the censorship war brewing in Australia. And as protests erupt across America demanding an end to the war in Gaza, demonstrators have swarmed the residence of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm here on the Sonia Poulton Show today with Dr. Robert Verkirk, Executive Director of the Alliance for Natural Health. And we were just about to talk about the targeting of those who talk more about natural health. So what we've seen clearly, Robert, is that anybody who talks about more mainstream healing, allopathic medicine, etc., they're fine, aren't they? But the moment that you want to go into anything that questions the official health narrative, you are in trouble on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're a mainstream medical doctor, you could, in fact, lose your license if you're talking about it. So essentially what has happened over the last 4 years is a complete destruction of the doctor-patient relationship, where the doctor no longer can offer the best advice within the confidentiality of that therapist patient relationship. And instead, they're having to look over their shoulders and determine what the medical boards, what the health authorities are allowing them to say. So you can see what happened in the middle of COVID with, you know, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, for example, and even the concept of early treatment that could have saved thousands of lives. So, yeah, towing the line is what it's all about, whether we're talking about the health system or the financial system. But natural health is absolutely in the crosshairs, and obviously that's the world that we've been very much leaders in for the last sort of 20 odd years. I left my position at Imperial College London 22 years ago in order to found the Alliance for Natural Health, and we're now very active in the United States, internationally with our international base in the UK, but really particularly in Europe as well. And we have different laws that are developing in parts of Europe. There's a sectarian law that's designed to attack cults in France that now has put natural health practitioners, anyone that offers advice that's contrary to mainstream medicine, basically to fine them up to €50,000 for doing that. But France is also a country that was putting people in jail for selling a gram a day of vitamin C. So, you know, that there's been pressure against natural health for years and years. Right now, we're seeing homeopaths who were generally medical doctors in Germany being disallowed from prescribing homeopathic medicines. So little by little, mainstream is fighting its corner, and that's why there is so much pushback. And we have to make sure that the people who are sitting on the fence or the people who don't yet know about this, the movable middle, do get to hear about the horrendous prospects if we allow the system to just carry on business as usual.
I mean, Robert, you clearly like a challenge, because in my lifetime, I've never known such a dominance of mainstream medicine as we have now, where there is a pill for every ill. And the onus and the emphasis is always on treating something rather than finding out what the cause is, or whether there may be an allergy to the whatever. But we always seem to want to suppress, don't we? Modern medicine is about suppression, isn't it? Rather than actually resolving the problem completely.
Sonia, you can look at it a different way. It's also a little bit like the pharmaceutical industry is something of a cornered rat at the moment, because the blockbuster drugs, you know, the patent cliff was hit, you know, 2010, 2012. A lot of the big blockbuster drugs, you know, that we're dealing with, hypertension, heart disease, have lost their patents. Generic drugs have come along, and what they're finding is that the pipeline for new drugs is looking pretty thin. And so we see the development of new technologies. So the mRNA platform is now seen as the wonder platform. And of course, as soon as we do this, we are moving into the realm of genetic drugs, drugs that can start to interact with our own genome. And so we're really at this cusp, this bifurcation point, at which we have to make a decision. Are we, as human beings who have been for several hundred thousand years during our evolution, entirely dependent on nature, are we now going to decide that technology has all the answers? And of course, that shift is being made at a time when public discourse is almost completely eliminated. If you want to be stand up there as a scientist like myself and talk about our concern about CRISPR technology, you know, gene edited foods entering the food supply chain without any pre-market testing, we immediately get shut down. If you want to talk about the potential risks of the mRNA platform and these genetic vaccines, you also get shut down. So the potential for us to be able to have open debate and to do that even on social media, which is the key platform that we now use for interaction, social interaction. We cannot do it because of these medical misinformation policies.
Robert, excuse me, tell our viewers where they can go to lend support to this petition.
This petition, very simply, we've created a new platform for it. Go to freespeech4, that's the numeral for health.org, freespeechforhealth.org. And you can go onto the landing page and you'll be directed straight to the petition page. The petition system is going through Voter Voice in the US that we've been using for many years. That's a very comprehensive platform. It doesn't allow duplicate signatures. We're collecting all the signatures there. We're also inviting organizations that have large networks to join it as partners, because when we arrive in Mountain View outside of San Jose in California, we're going to create a stonking big media event with demonstrations and meetings with the Alphabet leaders to say, guys, you have to change this medical misinformation policy. You cannot have a monopoly on health. You have to allow free speech around health.
Thank you so much, everybody. This is Dr. Robert Verkerk. And may I say, Robert, you are a brilliant advert for natural health. You are positively glowing on our screen out there, which is wonderful to see. And that's what natural health can do for you people, because it's not full of lots of nasty additives, etc. Robert, take good care of yourself. Thank you for joining
you so
us this
much,
morning.
Take
care. Have a great day. We'll be right back.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
But remember, there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay. And around the world for any animal, any disaster. Search ifa.org/disaster-ready.
TNT. Sonia Poulton and today's news talk, TNT.
Welcome back. Of course, breaking news today on the show. The power sharing deal between the SNP and Greens in Scotland has collapsed. First Minister Hamza Yousaf is holding an emergency cabinet meeting at his official residence in Bute House, Edinburgh. But how has this happened and what does it mean? Joining me to discuss this is Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. Good morning, Basil. What does this mean?
It means that for the first time ever, the Greens are no longer in government. By that, I mean their power sharing agreement with the SNP brought them into government for the first time in their history anywhere in the UK. But now that's over. Tensions have been brewing over a number of issues, including gender recognition, road building, climate strategy, marine policy, and Hamza Yousaf, the First Minister of Scotland's unilateral decision to freeze council tax rates after the SNP's humiliating defeat in the Rutherglen and Hamilton West by-election, with recent polls suggesting that the SNP faces losing dozens of seats at the next general election in the autumn, partly as a result of the disappointing performance of Yousaf's government in Edinburgh.
Not going well for him, is it, Basil?
No, it isn't. He's now going to carry on as a minority in the Scottish Parliament, which may work if people vote on issues rather than on party lines. But of course, the suspicion is that with the SNP vulnerable politically, the other parties will gang up to bring a series of defeats, then a motion of no confidence, and then there'll be fresh elections for the Edinburgh Parliament as well. But before we poo-poo the whole thing, you know, the Scottish Parliament is elected by a form of proportional representation, which means that at least the Greens get some seats. Now, you say you don't agree with the Greens and their sort of hardline climate policies, because ultimately this is what caused the collapse of the power-sharing deal. It was a so-called climate strategy. Yes, people still take all that very seriously up in Scotland. But, you know, at least the Scottish people are better represented in the Scottish Parliament than we are in Westminster, Sonia, with our first-past-the-post system. Remember, we've got a general election coming up this year in which Reform might get 16% of the vote nationally and no seats. And the Workers' Party of Great Britain could get 10% or more of the vote nationally and no seats. So, you know, for all that we might turn our nose up at the whole climate goals agreement not being met, and that's why this has ultimately collapsed. Nevertheless, at least in Scotland, smaller parties are brought into government, and it isn't just the two wings of the neoliberal warmongering uniparty.
Indeed, but I'm wondering whether Labour is sort of collectively now in the wings, rubbing their hands together. Do you think this will help them?
Well, yes. Labour, of course, were the dominant force in Scotland for decades. Dozens of Labour MPs returned to Westminster every year, and the disintegration of the Scottish Parliamentary Labour Party, it was one of the reasons why Jeremy Corbyn couldn't get a majority in 2017. The SNP have been the dominant force. I mean, it was worth remembering that, you know, a few decades ago, the SNP were a minor party, the nationalists, you know. They've achieved an awful lot. They've got their own parliament up there. They've, you know, they have a form of devolution. They've had one referendum on total independence, and they want to have another one. Of course, the fact that Nicola Sturgeon's husband has been arrested for embezzling funds doesn't aid the SNP's cause either. So it does seem we are past the high watermark of the Scottish National Party, for the time being at least.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sure this will continue rippling throughout the day and you'll be reporting on it, everybody. This is Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. We will be
on today's News Talk Radio.
Now we're talking! Down!
TNT.
Right, and we are back. Yesterday in Wales, a teenage girl was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after three people were injured in a school stabbing. Police said that two teachers and a teenage pupil were taken to hospital with non-life-threatening stab wounds. Pupils at the Carmarthenshire school were locked in their classrooms for about 4 hours following the incident, which happened in the morning. Joining me with the latest on this and further reaction to the news that the 20 miles per hour speed limit are to be overturned in Wales is the leader of Propel Wales, Neil McAvoy. Good morning, Neil.
Diolch yn fawr, Sonia. Thank you very much, Sonia. Bore da. Good morning.
Bore da to you too, Neil. And what can you tell us about this incident yesterday? Sounds absolutely horrendous. Parents must be terrified.
Yeah, I mean, my first profession was a teacher. I used to teach languages for 20 years. And I mean, very, very concerning that staff and pupils were stabbed. I'm also concerned at the reaction, to be honest. I mean, if there was a single incident, as it seems it was, and I actually heard about it knocking on a door in Grangetown for a council by-election. And there was somebody whose sister worked nearby and they heard about the lockdown and they were terrified, really, really upset about what may be happening to their family. And I mean, it's an isolated incident. It's very, very unfortunate. A complete overreaction, I would say, in this sense. I would.
That's,
I mean,
That's interesting, because isn't this like the third or fourth school lockdown in Wales that we've heard in a matter of months due to a major incident, or have we got that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some senses the authorities need to have a good word with themselves, but I think it's all part of today's narrative, really. There was one where I think there was somebody, that there was possible firearms involved. Absolutely, I would say clearly lock everything down. He didn't have firearms in the end, but that was a suspicion. I see the point there. Where there's an isolated incident, locking everybody down, terrifying pupils, terrifying parents, people who know, you know, the media were reporting on it, and there were no details. Completely unacceptable, I think. And I think we've got to get back to getting some kind of perspective on things. I'll tell you a story. This was probably underkill, but when I was younger, I was in school on an estate, and I was at the chip shop one afternoon eating my chips, and then a car pulled up, screeching tyres. Somebody jumped out the car, kicked the door in of the bookmaker. They had a sawn-off shotgun, robbed the bookmakers, and then drove off. And we were just eating our chips, watching it, you know. We went back to school and then said, oh, you know, what happened at the chip shop? So, oh, just armed robbery, you know. And we just got on with the day. I think looking back, the police probably should have spoken to us because we were prime witnesses. But there was no lockdown. There was no, we just got on with things. And I think what we've done now with today's generation is maybe not enable them just to get on with things. I wasn't traumatized. I didn't have to speak to a
counselor. Right. So cotton wool kids, have we really raised the generation of cotton wool kids? Because this, so what you're really saying is that this is an overreaction. This is fear mongering. Is that accurate? Right.
This is just my personal view, but there's a really horrendous incident where people are hurt. And it's isolated. There's only one perpetrator. They've been dealt with. Why do you keep kids in a classroom for 4 hours? God knows what they thought was happening. I saw something on TikTok where a child in another lockdown said that he was terrified. And I mean, the authorities really need to have a good word with themselves. It just seems to be the culture that we're living in nowadays. COVID, you had grown men petrified of leaving their front door.
Fear nation.
Yeah,
well, you know, that's obviously the best way to control people, isn't it? But do you, Neil, think that this is because it's a wider issue in terms of, do you think that there is a sort of fear nationally that children aren't safe in schools?
I don't know. I think we're caught in a culture of mass hysteria.
Wow.
Which is being driven. But I mean, and the real things are happening, which are not actually getting the attention that they should. We've got a First Minister in Wales who got a donation for £200,000 off a criminal, convicted criminal. And it turns out that the Welsh government, his government, which he leads, lent the criminal's company £400,000. So you've got the First Minister getting elected on £200,000 from the public purse indirectly. I mean, that's an issue in Wales, which we should be talking about more.
Is that a story that BBC Wales are reporting on, or is that one of the ones that they've been ignoring?
No, they're reporting on it. Yeah, they are reporting on it. Having said that, I don't really watch BBC now. I just mean,
oh, good shout.
Cursory glance at Twitter. So many scandals here in Wales, which don't see the light of day.
Right, cherry picking. I take your point. There is always a huge amount of fear mongering. We have to be incredibly careful, and especially because it is terrifying, isn't it, for a parent, the idea that there may be knives in schools. That is positively terrifying.
I mean, you know, do we have metal detectors? I don't know. They do in America. Is that necessary? I don't know. But I mean, if I was a parent in that school, I'd be furious. I would be really furious, to be honest. And I wonder what the hell they were playing at in locking my child in a classroom for 4 hours over one incident.
Right. 4 hours, long time, isn't it? That would be terrifying for the pupils as well, because you just don't know what's going to happen, whether somebody's suddenly going to happen upon your classroom or whatever. Yeah, that is terrifying. No, I do take your point, Neil. I do.
Point of view, Sonia? Do you agree with that? Or do you think that there was it was a proportionate response? I know you're interviewing me, so apologies for the question.
Well, The truth is, I don't know. I wasn't there, so I don't know whether it was a disproportionate response. But I do know enough about you, and I do know what type of person you are. And if you're saying that there was fear-mongering involved and it was a disproportionate response, then I tend to listen to you rather more than, say, BBC Wales or wherever may or may not be reporting on it. I do take your point, and I do think it's interesting how they cherry-pick news, usually of a political persuasion. So, but Neil, there is some good news in Wales, which I think is cause for some celebration. Neil, I love it. Neil is being very contrary this morning. This is fun. I'm far and away prefer this, and people agreeing with me. So, Neil, the reversal of the 20 mile per hour speed limit, is that not a cause for celebration? Aren't we all fed up of that?
Sonia, I'll believe it when I see it. It's the Labour PR spin machine. They're going to look at it. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, these guys are the masters of deception. You've got a thing called later Welsh Labour. It's not Welsh at all. It's run from London. You know, there is no thing called Welsh Labour. It's a marketing ploy in our country here to make people think that the Labour Party is a Welsh party when it's not. It's dominated by Westminster.
Neil, are you trying to say that Welsh affairs have not improved since Mark Drakeford went?
Oh, my God. gee, God. You can't really get much worse than Drakeford, but I think...
really?
But Gethin's given a really good go. We've got to get rid of these people. I mean, it's... but I think people are waking up. They are waking up now. We've got a by-election today. It's only a council by-election, but we'll see how we get on. We've been having some interesting conversations around and about in an area where we had no previous presence. So it's interesting.
Neil, let me ask you about our question of the day. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's obviously to do with Labour, your favourite party again. Vow to renationalise most rail services within 5 years. And we've been asking, what other services would you like to see under state control? And it's been interesting that some people have said, none at all, no longer trust government, don't want anything centralised. What would your answer be to that, though?
Good question. It's a really good question. I do believe in social ownership of railways and utilities. I think the energy companies should not be run privately. We're just getting creamed left, right, and centre. And you know, electricity, gas, massive prices here. We've got Welsh gas that we should be using. It should be a publicly owned company, in my opinion, making money for the taxpayer. And I think what we should have is efficiently run state companies owned by the state, where the profit comes back into the communities. I mean, why is it the billionaires profit off Mrs. Jones paying £200 a month electricity to keep herself warm? And in France, the pensioners probably pay just £50, which the knock-on effect is it makes industry here really uncompetitive in terms of costs, which we're seeing with the steelworks, for example. So, yeah, I do believe in social ownership. But I think COVID really changed my politics, though, in terms of the evils of the state and the need for the state to be controlled and the need to empower individuals through a written constitution. I think every country in the UK, in my view, should have a written constitution. Wales, Scotland, England, let Ireland go back to be an island, I would say. But we need rights which are enshrined in law to protect us from states. But I do believe in social ownership.
Absolutely, and protect us from the globalists. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, everybody. This is Neil McAvoy, and he's basically telling us, don't be scared and don't believe the hype. That's essentially your message this morning, isn't it, Neil? I think that fairly sums it up. That sounds good to me. Take good care of yourself. Thank you so much for joining us on today's News Talk. Take care. And that is just about brings us to the end of Thursday's show. Thank you so much for all of your responses to our question of the day. We truly appreciate it. Of course, coming up next is David Curtin. He'll be joined by Rachel Matthews and Pamela Thomas. Do not go anywhere. TNT, of course, whole raft of programs. And as you can see, we are here breaking news day in and day out. I want to say thank you to every single one of you wonderful commentators. Lemsip says, I agree with Neil on public ownership. Absolutely. And Louis says, even if they do reverse it, people will still do 20 miles per hour. I think that is kind of what they will be doing, right? So as I say, stick around, loads coming up for you. And the most important thing is that you go out and enjoy this weather as much as you can. And on tomorrow's show, we've got Andrew Eborn, Dr. Tess Laurie, and Professor Fabio Ving, which I am very much looking forward to. I'm off to enjoy this weather. I've got somebody else walking my dog today, which is fabulous. A break from me. It's like when I used to pack off my daughter to somebody and I'd have a night off, which was absolutely fabulous. And so that's what I intend to do today. Listen, as I say, take care of yourself. Join us tomorrow and do not go anywhere. See you tomorrow.